This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The last time we talked with William Carroll, who's executive director of St. Joseph's College in Rensselaer, they had just announced a multi-year plan to help bring the college back, and some great things have been planned. Let's do an update now. And Mr. Carroll, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Chris, thank you for having me.
Well, first, if you will give us a little history lesson here for folks that may be joining us and not heard about St. Joseph's College, the issues that they had gone through, and bring us up to speed on some of the latest as well.
Yeah, in 2017, the Board of Trustees voluntarily suspended accreditation, which means it effectively shut the college down. And the idea was to bring the college back in new and exciting forms. And this is not a different move for St. Joseph's. They've had about 11 different iterations in their history. So 2017, accreditation was suspended. Students were then, enabled to move to other institutions to finish their degrees or their programs. And then the college went about the business of securing its debt. Once the debt was secured, which it has been, the next move is, what do we bring back to the college that will serve the community and the larger state regional area? And that's the process we're under right now.
Mm-hmm. I know the Board of Trustees are very much supporting, as I mentioned earlier, about a multi-year plan. What does the plan consist of that are bringing these things up to date and trying to plan for the future?
Yeah, the part of the announcement of closing the college was we immediately began a fundraising campaign to 128 donors to secure the near future, and we've achieved that. And a promise was to come up with a strategic plan at the end of 2019, which would lay out the immediate future. And that we did. It's called, the 128 Strategic Plan.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it comes down to two units. We're working on developing what we call a university center, in which we invite accredited institutions on the campus to offer specific programs. The second piece is a career college, which focuses on developing certificate programs that will enable students to, in a short time period, get job skills where they can immediately find jobs. On the University Center, right before COVID struck, Ivy Tech began offering courses leading to an associate's degree. And that's pretty much on hold now with the COVID going on. We hope to pick that up when we come back. We're in conversations with several other institutions, we're not nameable at this point just because they are still conversations.
Right.
But the idea is to bring back some significant programs, low-cost tuition, and then at the first-year level, and then build that up to a junior-senior level. So those conversations are ongoing. I'm hoping now with the vaccine announced and things like that, we can really start planning, perhaps even fall 2021, to pick up where we left off with the on-campus programs. On the career side, we're now offering classes. The first certificate programs that we developed were in the healthcare field. We offer a certificate in nursing assistants, one in medical assistants, one in EKG, and one in phlebotomy. We had our first group of students go through. They had 100% pass rate on the state exam, which is really exciting. We have our second group underway and are about to start a third group. So the certificate programs are taking off. We're looking at developing some other career skills producing certificate programs, perhaps in welding, perhaps in drone maintenance and oversight for police officers, programs that are short-term but produce quick jobs. So the certificate side is going well. The University Center, where we're bringing in the traditional academic program, is up and going, but the COVID has held everybody up. What we're looking at in coming back is we will be a liberal arts college. We will maintain our mission and our Catholic identity, but it's going to respond more to the needs of the local community. We just did a major survey in the Rensselaer area, had 500 respondents, which I thought was very well.
Yes.
And they talked about the kinds of programs that they were looking at: education, criminal justice, business, the healthcare system, focusing on those kinds of programs. We're also very much aware that we live in a rural community, and we are looking at developing programs around the farming agricultural business that is in the area. That's kind of where we are. It's slow, but it's methodical.
It sounds like that the many of these programs that you and the Board of Trustees have talked about and are implementing are very, very successful programs in other communities. So this is not totally new, but it's kind of adapting something to the Rensselaer area, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, and you know, I'm new. 2019, I think I began working there. You know, one of the things that strikes me about our traditional liberal arts colleges, they sometimes forget where they are. And we kind of talk like if we're in a major urban area. You know, Rensselaer is a rural area. And as we emerge back, I think you will see us embracing our ruralness and developing programs attuned to that community need. We're also working, you know, with other groups to develop on-site programs and partnerships with human care agency type programs. The dormitories, we have 100 beds ready for occupancy immediately. The core building, we've totally refurbished that. It has just received its own HVA system on the roof, so we're not connected to the entire, you know, pipeline network that's on the campus, which is very expensive. It's a state-of-the-art, well-maintained, beautiful building. So we're developing the programs around the apartments and also around that core building. The other buildings will be dealt with at a later time.
Now, I understand, Mr. Carroll, that you and members of the Board of Trustees at St. Joseph's College have been soliciting not only the input that you got from the local community, from around Rensselaer, but other people that might be interested in helping the college out. And you've gotten some comments in and at least some proposals, but you've asked for more information. Tell us a little bit about Mark Andrew Zartorski, if I'm pronouncing his last name right. Who is he? What was his interest in St. Joseph's College and how the Board of Trustees have reacted to what he's had to say?
Well, you know, Mark Zartorski, okay,
mm-hmm.
I'm not doing it either, I apologize, is an alum, okay, a very loyal alum of the college, I think back in 1964. And he's put together a 100-plus page proposal of ideas of how to totally 100% refurbish the entire campus, all the buildings, the academic programs, the entire campus would be renovated and brought up to date. He's presented that to the board, and you know the specifics. I believe the board might have a do not disclose with
right.
So I can do you 50,000 feet. But the specifics are the MAS proposal, as it's called. It's mom and dad. Everybody likes it. I like it. It's wonderful, okay? The ideas are great, but the specifics are very small, okay? There's very little specifics on how this will be accomplished. And what the board did is the board did not vote on this proposal because they didn't quite know what to vote on. And they've come back, and I think you may have a copy of the letter, but I think there are four or five criteria that the board's looking for. First of all, is, you know, what's the cost of the idea going to cost? You know, what do you need from the college? What does the college have to provide? Who pays for what? What's the financial sources of those money? And what does the return on investment look like? And is it clearly part of the mission and vision of St. Joseph's College? So, you know, we welcome the MAS group proposal. Okay, we need those questions answered. But we welcome ideas from anybody, but the same criteria would apply. How do you resolve those criteria? For example, one idea is to turn the recreation center into a 24/7 facility, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But how are we going to pay for that, and will the market support it there? And so we need to go from aspirational ideas to very specific operational ideas. How this is going to happen? What's the college's role in this? Where's the money coming from? That's really kind of important. When we look at the campus, you're talking about a large physical infrastructure that needs to be rebuilt, if they decide to rebuild it, because some of those buildings are so outdated that it may not be worth the energy. But, you know, in terms of the MAS proposal, the college welcomes proposals from anybody, but you got to help us out a little bit in terms of what's the cost, where's the source of the funds, how does this fit our mission, how will this operationalize, how will it unfold? And that's not what we've been able to see so far in the MAS conversation.
So what you're hoping for now, at least, is to get more specific information back, and particularly on how much it'll cost, the revenue and things like that, to be able to meet these costs and whatever he's planning and the other people that might come in would want to expect as well, too, I suppose.
Well, I know if you're going to totally renovate the college, you're talking upwards $60 million probably, if not more.
Wow.
Okay, fine, but where's it coming from? Okay, what's the source of the funding? Or why not take one target project and let's work on that together?
So it sounds like he's off to an interesting start here, and you're certainly not turning anybody else's ideas down, Reeser.
Absolutely not. No, but, you know, to me it's the old I love mom and apple pie. We all do. We all want to see the college back in some glorious manner. But, you know, the liberal arts colleges across the country right now are going out of business, all right? What we have at St. Joe's is what I call a tabula rasa, a blank tablet on which the college, the community, the supporters can write to create that model institution that both serves the community and the students it educates. And getting the right mix is really, really important. So we welcome the ideas, the input of ideas, but just, you know, fill in the blanks a little bit. I would love to see, let's just say a 9-lane track all the way around St. Joe's. But what does that have to do with our mission? How does it help our educational purposes? Who's going to pay for it? Okay. We just need the very specific, any business that goes out after, you know, a new project breaks it right down to the ground level. That's what we need from any proposal.
Well, hopefully you get some response back in the letter that you sent back to Mark, telling him specifically, the Board of Trustees telling him specifically what they're looking for. And I hope you get a good response back from him and anybody else that has shown some interest so far.
And Mark has worked extremely hard on this, but, you know, the role of the board is to be the fiduciary agents of the college. They have to oversee the whole benefit of the college.
Right.
They just need these questions answered.
Well, hope you get the answer soon.
I hope so.
Well, Mr. Carroll, thank you very much for the updates, and we hope you do get more response from people that are interested in helping St. Joseph's College on back to a bigger and better campus in Rensselaer, and we appreciate you spending time with us to talk about it.
Well, Chris, the important thing is it's already back with the partnerships with the other universities, the certificate programs. We encourage the community to look at those certificate programs. They're very inexpensive. And the job market out there is pretty large for those healthcare programs.
William Carroll is the executive director of St. Joseph's College in Rensselaer. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Well, we're getting close to the time where families get together for the holidays. And how about some ideas about maybe some good conversations, getting aside from the election-related ones, or maybe talking about that strange-looking turkey. It's smaller than usual this year, but that's all right. But there are some other things, too, that should be talked about around the dinner table, or at least after dinner, and they involve money. To find out more about those, let's check in with Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammard. Greg, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me on, Chris.
Well, let's take a look first about what type of conversations, if they're financially related, that you should have or can have, for that matter, with family members during the holiday season.
Well, I mean, there's multiple levels of conversation that just help create clarity, you know, within families, amongst children, survivors. I mean, there's just a lot of things that are unknown. It's really problematic if you have something occur suddenly in the family, you know, with an accident, somebody passes away, or somebody begins to experience, you know, a mental incapacity. Mm-hmm. At that point, trying to figure out what their true desires are and how you can facilitate helping them, as opposed to having those discussions, those very frank discussions, you know, while everybody is still very much aware of what's going on and what their, you know, their desires are.
I guess a lot of it, as you mentioned, if you can't possibly be together physically, that at least the technology is there that you can have these kinds of meetings, can't you?
Yeah, and, you know, unfortunately, I personally had an experience with a sudden loss of a family member. And, you know, without these conversations, technology even allows us to communicate. But without these conversations, it's really difficult trying to go back and find out, okay, where is everything? Have I found everything? What things are going on that I'm not aware of? I think most of us are pretty private in our finances, especially a lot of times around family, but that's what often can create a lot of the challenges if and when we do need the help.
Now, what would you say are some of the most important conversations that one should have with family members because of these problems that can come up?
There's a couple of them. I think one, just, you know, understanding or taking a financial inventory. You know, we do a lot of things. We call it a family estate organizer, where It's just basically a landing spot for everything that would be pertinent. It's kind of, you know, one of those things I often express to our clients. It's the things that the kids need to know, but you don't want them to know yet. You know, you aggregate it in a source, you know, this organizer, and you say, hey, if something were to happen to me or something were to happen to mom, this is where you need to go. This is your resource. Mm-hmm. These are the financial professionals we have relationships. Here's their contact info. Here's their numbers. And it's just, it helps us understand, you know, it gives us direction.
I guess probably a lot of people don't know this information. Like you say, if it's private, that is, it's private, say, between the husband and wife, and maybe it's been brought up with the youngsters, but not really as it should be, this is probably the time that you ought to have it out there in handwriting somehow.
Yeah, and there's a lot of simple things, too, that with it. I mean, just give thought for a second to who knows my passwords, right? Mm-hmm. And would they have access to a lot of these accounts and the problems that could result in? But, you know, even further down that list is, you know, what are my desires? You know, what things do I want to go to which children or to which family members? Or, you know, is there charitable interests? Is there other things that I would like to do with heirlooms or sentimental items, and have frank discussions while everybody can be involved and, you know, be open and transparent about, hey, this is something I would really enjoy, and, okay, we agree that that's something, instead of trying to do it after the fact. And, you know, updating beneficiary forms, it's one of the most common things that we see causes problems if somebody were to pass away. And it's, you know, these, you may have put your beneficiaries in, but the reason we use the terminology updating is custodians change, things get lost at the custodians, and often when we call and check on these, even though beneficiaries were put in, they're not there. Or, you know, 401ks have spousal waivers that need to be signed, especially in the event of a second marriage. Otherwise, you disinherit your children. So it's just understanding the simple things that would clarify and then legally allow the things to be done that you truly want to be done at the time that, you know, you would pass or become incapacitated.
I suppose life insurance is probably one of those areas, too, that you have to get caught up on and make sure that it's all up to date.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything from life insurance, custodial accounts, brokerage accounts, ERISA accounts. I mean, in today's environment, just about everything could be listed as a beneficiary or with the beneficiary or be passed. And even in Indiana, you can list the beneficiary on your home. And being able to do that just simplifies the probate process, creates a lot more simplicity for whoever the executor of the estate would be or whoever's going to handle those affairs. And then even to the point of efficiency from passing on for tax planning, you know, retirement planning, how are these things listed and what are the things that we could potentially do today to lessen the tax burden, you know, for not only ourselves, but for the people that are ultimately going to receive these benefits. And it's complex. There's a lot of things that, you know, working in one area definitely would affect, you know, if I'm doing certain things in wealth management, how does that affect my taxes? If I'm doing things in taxes, how does that affect my Social Security? And how does that affect my Medicare? How does it affect my legacy planning? And, you know, all those things are interwoven, and you need to understand from a holistic standpoint, you know, how do all these things work together, and what is the most efficient distribution plan and legacy plan, and how do I create the most from an objective standpoint that I desire.
You never realize how difficult it is to make sure that the amount of taxes are as low as you can get them, so there's more money in the bank accounts for the family if something does happen.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just simple. I mean, it's usually not something that people are going to intentionally do, but labeling an estate as a beneficiary or a trust beneficiary, you just got to understand the pros and cons of doing that. Specifically when it comes to taxation, you know, having an IRA go to a trust, is there a control issue or is there something we need to understand more about taxes? And so a lot of times the intent is to make things easier, but in making things sometimes easier from a, you know, clarity standpoint for beneficiaries, it has consequences from a tax impact or, you know, legacy impact. So it's all stuff that needs to be considered. And having the conversations now while everybody's together, while putting everybody on the, you know, the same awareness, to, you know, getting them the same information and then talking intelligently about it and creating a more efficient distribution plan or understanding the desires of mom, dad, you know, brothers, sisters, whatever it might be, it just helps create a lot of clarity. And often the tension that exists, you know, at the time of, you know, the estate being passed on or, you know, the executor's working, just creates a lot more clarity and simplicity for that executor or whoever's handling the estate.
Well, it certainly sounds like these are all great discussions that you should have. Maybe they're not holiday related, but they are important because you want to be sure the holidays are enjoyable, because we are all going to be going through different ways to celebrate holidays. But if we do it right, I guess we'll have a way to be able to do it, still enjoy ourselves and be able to get this very important information taken care of. As always, Greg, thank you very much for bringing it to us today.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
That's Northwest Indiana Financial Advisor Greg Hammer. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we'll bring you more about a program that's underway across the state as well as here in Northwest Indiana to enlist community members to reach out to unemployed Hoosier workers. More about that. A Northwest Indiana journalist has joined in on a test group testing a COVID-19 vaccine, and we'll have the conversation that he had with off-mic host Michael Plenty, and we'll bring you updates, too, on how county government offices are dealing with the coronavirus. All coming up on Regionally Speaking tomorrow. We hope that you'll be with us.